We're on our way to show some solidarity with the union.
Yo, bro, you work for Amazon? You gonna vote for that union?
There just won't be enough jobs to give all Americans a decent, livable wage.
I want my kids to grow up in a society where they don't have to struggle as hard as we do. That's what we need to fight for.
I mean, our middle class is, you know, I don't want to say it's gone, but it erodes every single day.
Do you think they're going to build any affordable housing here?
Oh, hell no.
I don't want to work three jobs, nights, weekends. I want a life.
The trick in trickle-down economics is getting you to believe that anything which is good for rich people is good for everyone, and anything that is good for everyone else will kill the economy.
A union agitator.
If they're not going to take care of their employees, somebody has to.
They don't invest in us. They don't show us the resources.
It's just not sustainable. The system is going to collapse.
We got to take care of ourselves. We can't rely on the government, and we damn sure can't rely on the 1% class. What the hell?
This is union busting one-on-one.
They're going to spend millions of dollars just to stop that.
The voting wrapping up. Now employees are waiting on results.
If successful, it could spark a labor movement across the country.
Look at everyone out here suffering. What are you doing for us?
Our job as Americans is to fight to save this country. We need bold actions, organizing. We can't allow ourselves to be divided.
It's really time to rise and fight.
I need all of y'all. Are you going to get in the streets and do something?
You can handle the responsibility of being a leader. Say it with your chest.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio. We're so excited to welcome veteran filmmaker and director Sean Claffey on the show to talk about his award-winning documentary. And it's all through Shine the Light Films. We love that name, right? It's called Americant. It is out on VOD now in the US and Canada, on major platforms. So check it out on their website, americond.com. And welcome, Sean. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me.
Is it okay to be a little riled up after watching your documentary? Just to be a
I would
little
hope so.
Like, yeah, I just, I'm like, I'll watch my language. Okay, I'll behave. But no, you know, I think you did this amazing job of showcasing what regular Americans are going through to make a living, right? Of all levels. And Nancy and I talk about this. Our clientele are mostly small business, right? And we cover small tourism destinations as travel writers as well. And I think you see people really battle in so many ways. There's these huge corporations like you talk about with Amazon in the film. You showcase what the Amazon workers did trying to unionize, and we were following that. We're like, come on. But I feel people are at this point right now because we're losing our middle America, which is what your film really showcases. Here's this 1%, and then here's what used to be middle America, but you give us this history that I really didn't quite know. That at this point now, for even unionizing for the Amazon workers, that they're too scared to lose the income that they're making now that they can't afford to lose.
Yeah. So with Amazon, they use all these different threats. You know, we're gonna close the factory down. You know, we're going to get rid of all the people that want to sign up for a union. You know, all these threats, they're actually illegal. You know, these are illegal threats under the law, but they still do them. What was amazing was, you know, meeting Chris Smalls and his team very early on.
Amazing.
And following their journey, they wanted some rights to have masks and gloves because people were getting sick, and they would just move them off the station, move someone else on, they get sick. You know, it's like disposable people. And you know, in Amazon, if you go to the bathroom too many times, you get fired. And you get fired by a text message from an AI. And then your security tag just stops working and you can never get back in the building. So it's really very inhumane conditions. But, you know, it's not just Amazon. Amazon is, you know, in our film, but there are many, many companies in this country and more that are, you know, basically extracting and abusing the you know, the workforce.
And at the same time with this, I think one of them in your film talked about that it's not even a real contract that they have when they get hired. And like, it's just kind of like, it's,
oh, there's, you're, yeah, they're at will workers. They can be fired for any reason. So, and they are fired. In fact, the business model is to fire them. So if you make it to 5 years, which is almost unheard of, they offer you a $5,000 bonus to quit and never work in another Amazon facility again, because they know that your body is probably destroyed and they don't want to pay for the workman's comp. They're really, their business model is based on disposable Americans.
And a lot of towns, like, and you know, Nancy and I travel the country full time and we see these small towns, and we look at responsible tourism as a way of responsible tourism. And that doesn't mean, you know, it means leaving the integrity of your community in place, okay? The history and celebrating the nature and all of those things. So when you look at what happens to communities, you could have a community that really probably went through some kind of factory town thing, and historically people moved there, and then the factory town or the mining or whatever bailed. And then, oh, here comes Amazon or some other big package, you know, distribution center. And everybody's like, oh, this is bringing millions into our community, jobs, and everybody signs on. And I even heard, like, at one community, they actually paid like Walmarts and stuff to come in. Whatever they had in the town coffers actually paid them to come in some ways, in some places. So did you see any of that in the documentary when you were making it?
Yeah, absolutely. We were down in Bessemer, Alabama. Now, the Bessemer steel mills were some of the most high-tech, best steel mills in the country. The people that worked there would make very good wages with great healthcare and pensions. And, you know, you know, people like blame China or Mexico or, but it was the, you know, it was those CEOs that decided to move those jobs overseas. So you have something like a steel mill or manufacturing that was eliminated, whether it was in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, and all just the entire community collapses, right? So people making, you know, $35 an hour, now scrambling for minimum wage jobs. And we have to remember that the minimum wage has been unchanged for 20 plus minus years. It is $7.25 an hour in the country.
As a general, California is a little different.
No, I'm talking about the basic federal minimum wage. Yes, localities can have different, but you know, all, you know, most of the red, you know, right to work states. And the one of the shocking numbers is it's 45% of people ages 18 to 65 have a median income of $10.50 an hour. How do you survive on $10.50 an hour?
Especially
public transportation, you know, without that, you know, you have to have a car, you know, you don't survive. So you just see so many people falling off, you know, the middle class, the working class, into poverty and homelessness. And it's terrible. These are good people that working really hard, sometimes two jobs, three jobs, 40, 50, 60 hours a week. It's heartbreaking.
What we see now, and I think what your documentary Americon does so well, is show us how this started to happen in the 80s. And you see, and also pointing the finger, righteously so, and I say it righteously because I mean they did it well, of both main parties, the Republicans and the Democrats, have done disservice on both sides of this. And basically it's, I mean, there's so much money in politics now that it's really not for the people. I don't think until we see a change, I don't think anyone's going to change my mind on that from what we can see, right? And when you look at small business now, because that's a lot of what we represent in our company is small business. And we look at, here comes the minimum wage change. So in California, it's up over $15 now. And then the small business person, especially outside of a city in an unincorporated area, unincorporated areas get screwed in a lot of ways. And in a lot of ways, you get a little more leeway depending on who, what, and where. But like you're saying, like, okay, you're going to have to drive. There's no transportation that's going to take you from your home down the mountain to this workplace, right? And then at the same time, the small business, sometimes a small business owner is about someone who has a teeny bit of money that they can invest, or they do it out of desperation, a small business. They're in just as worse a position as the workers half of the time. That's what we're seeing. So when it comes to the minimum wage being raised, they're like, oh crap, I'm screwed. And so does the worker. So it's kind of this, I feel like we're in the same place.
Yeah, so basically the small business has been greatly under attack for a long time, as well as the workers. The monopolies really are squeezing out the small businesses. The Walmarts come to town and put out, you know, the local printing shop, the hardware store, the appliance store, and turn these, you know, small businesses that take that money, reinvest it in the community, you know, sponsor the local football team, the local high school, and they extract that right out of the system. So, you know, the dollar stores, all of these, you know, really multinational corporations who do not pay their people enough money to live, put enormous pressure on the small businesses. And then their lobbies are able to, massive subsidies given to these large companies. And the small business just doesn't get those subsidies. So, you know, what I think can be done is the small business need to band together and almost make their own kind of organization that fights for, you know, Walmart doesn't need subsidies. Amazon doesn't need subsidies, even though they get, you know, over $100 million a year and basically don't pay any taxes. And then there's the monopolization of the supply chain. So they jack the prices up, so the margins are decreased, right? So the risk is, you know, is put on that small business. And I've had small businesses myself. Now, you know, could we do a subsidy so that they could, you know, raise wages? Absolutely. And the important thing to realize is that 70% of all people on government assistance work full time.
I think this was I stopped your documentary watching it at that point and went, that's it. We get so many people telling, I mean, I think everyone's families are divided right now too, from what we talk about. And oh, well, everybody on welfare, especially, and you bring home such a good point on single mothers of what they've gone through, like, oh, you're the tarnished ones, you know? And, you know, my mom's a single mom and she's a badass, okay? She's done so much to make things happen and still fighting to this day. And she's a small business owner. And you see so many women go into that because eventually it's like, you know what? How many jobs do I have to have when let me just do my own? And then it's like, still topsy-turvy, is why I bring up the minimum wage and how it affects small business owners, because a lot of times it's the same people, the same fight, it's the same thing. And we have put small business, like, you know, Walmart's a corporation now, but it was a small business way back when. And there's small businesses that are still in that, I would say the 20 to 30% that are still getting to be small business, when you know they can come in and make a shell of a company. You know how they do all of that, right? So it's this mess. So, and then I have customers, clients, personal clients that have basically been swallowed by Amazon, and some who are actually in a lawsuit now. And you can't get further on Amazon. You can't grow in that sphere if you've now gone into that distribution mode, if you've gone this way, and then giant corporations of people that come in with money and they buy out your stock so that they can buy the revenue to go further on Amazon. So anyway, I'm sorry, but that the whole thing is so bad. But going back to the people, the mothers, the people that are on right now, look at what just happened with the debt ceiling and what's going on as we record right now. The whole debt ceiling, where we almost lost Social Security, has been coming up as an issue. We could lose that. You look at welfare and food stamps, and you're saying 70% are work full time. And then where are the disabled part in there, you know?
Yeah, then you have some mentally ill people, people that are, you know, disabled, been in accidents, you know, have cancer, you know, had a heart attack. You know, those are real people. And, you know, maybe they can't work because they're doing chemo 5-6 days a week, right? We are an incredibly rich country. We can take care of our people. The since 1975, there has been 50 trillion dollars extracted from the middle and working class to the top 1%, and really to the top, like, you know, 0.1%.
But we can't even read all the zeros anymore.
Oh, I mean, you can't even comprehend what $50 trillion. It's double the entire GDP of the country for 2 years. So, you know, it's astounding. We have the money. It's just being extracted away from the workers, away from the small businesses. Give the subsidies to the small business. You know, Amazon doesn't need hundreds of millions of dollars in subsidies.
I watched an Amazon worker drive to the pets that we were doing, and you could hear her brakes go out on her van, and she was in trouble. And homeowner's like, she knows her, they know the dogs. Hey. And she couldn't talk, no chit chat. Here's your package. I got to go. She's going, you're going to get in an accident if you go up this hill in a van with no brakes. And this girl was compromised at that spot. And I went, you're screwed. You're screwed because now you're taking time because you just talked to a customer.
Yeah, no, it's inhumane. And this is the thing. All these large businesses could change the middle class overnight. If Amazon alone raised their minimum pay, you know, from I think it's $16, $17 an hour now to $30 an hour, which they could do without question. The math has been done. Maybe Jeff Bezos wouldn't be the third richest person in the world. Maybe he would be the eighth, right? And he would just change. What's that?
I said, you just talked ego there, right? There, his ego would have to, you know.
Yeah, but so all the other large companies would have to match, right? And this is the lie. Raising wages kills jobs, right? Raising wages doesn't kill jobs because if no one has any money, who's going to buy your stuff?
That's the thing.
Right? So it's a hallucination. This is from Nick Hanauer in the film, genius guy.
Oh, he's a billionaire. Amazing.
He's a
amazing man.
And he says, it's this hallucination. I'm a business owner. I can't pay my people enough to buy my stuff. but all of you other business owners have to pay your people enough to buy my stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, that's insanity, right? So, you know, how do you get rid of homelessness? Well, you increase wages and you make affordable housing. How do you get rid of income inequality? Well, you raise wages. It's not hard. It's just that we have these think tanks that are heavily funded, these lobbyists, where sometimes there's, you know, 1,500 per senator in Washington, depending on the industry, who are fighting to just decimate the middle class and the path to the middle class, right? So you used to be able to be a cashier, right, in the 70s, have a union job, have a pension system, and own a house, have a car, and go on vacation. Well, you know, people in all sorts of jobs don't have $400 for a medical emergency.
No, no, they don't. Yeah, and it's I think you also made a really good point in the documentary of facts of how much money Amazon puts towards their lobbyists and pays their lobbyists versus their own employees. You know, the ratio of that is so unjust, whereas you could just actually fund your employees and you wouldn't have to deal with that other side at all. You know, it's kind of this balance. It's you know, when I look at it, I go like, what are you doing? How much is it? It's about power. I don't understand the thinking behind that, but I do want to go behind your thinking of what led you to make this documentary.
Yeah. So what is it? You know, and we've debated this in our team over and over again, and we think it is a hoarding mentality. It's almost a mental illness.
Ooh.
That they have to just extract every penny that they possibly can. And we kind of go over the psychology of it a little bit from, and the cover given by Milton Friedman in the 60s and 70s and how,
dude, you know, I'm never going to look at him the same.
Yeah, no, he's
wow.
Yeah, it was the anti New Deal, right? Which built the middle class basically. But why did we make the film? Well, my family are immigrants from Ireland, and my grandfather was able to come to the United States, you know, out of really abject poverty. Didn't own a pair of shoes until the community chipped in to buy him a suit and shoes to come to this country. He basically worked for, you know, as a servant, sweeping floors, whatever. You know, worked his ass off. Finally got in a union in New York City and was able to ascend. You know, and my grandmother also got in. She was a radiology tech at hospital, and they ascended into the middle class. They were able to buy a home. They had amazing healthcare. They had amazing pensions. You know, my grandma lived to her mid 90s, and there, you know, all of her healthcare was paid for. And that's the way it was. And that wasn't that long ago. You know, I was, you know, a kid, and we could, you know, we've done this already, right? We went from the 20s where it was just income inequality and just people living in squalor, and then, you know, was able to fight that and then flip it, and then that's where the middle class came from. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and then from then productivity, profits, and the, you know, wages went up together, and in about 1980, after about 10 years of planning, it split, and the middle class fell away, and profits and productivity kept rising. CEO pay is just insane. You know,
especially
just today,
the banks. We're watching that during all the bailouts. We're like, God.
I'm going to collapse a bank, and I'm going to get a $30 million paycheck. Yeah. What? Well, if a small business owner collapses their business, they're probably going to lose their house.
Yeah, and be homeless. Yeah.
Yeah.
And everybody's, and then at the same time, let's flood the country with drugs, right? Because that was another corporate issue. That's, I think the drug pandemic is, or epidemic, whatever we want to call it, goes hand in hand with the corporate money-making thing. It's the same thing.
Yeah, so when you try your hardest for years and years and years, and you're not making it after every week, your credit card bill is going up, and you're not making it, and you go into despair, and then you see the suicide rates are through the roof. You know, you're seeing the drug abuse is through the roof, alcoholism is through the roof. These are all symptoms.
Yeah.
You know, and
pandemic showed how many people started drinking just over one situation. They're at home. Everyone started drinking more, eating more, you know. I do want to touch too on what you did in the documentary for everyone to understand how you showed such a diverse set of people going through, you know, all stage. I mean, I think what was interesting that you took a family in Mill Valley, California, which is la-di-da. That is like, oh, and I thought it was so brilliant that you did this because they lived there through their lives. Suddenly, he worked for Oracle, right? Or I had a friend who could see Oracle coming with their shutdowns and bailed early and said, you know, I got the Oracle, but I'm like, I'm going to be a consultant now. Screw this. I can see what's coming. They're not that cool. It turned out to be right. And your documentary just proved that. And here, I mean, these are smart people, and she stands up for the arts, which immediately gets poo-pooed when stuff comes down. But if we don't have the arts, we don't have the truth makers, which is what you do. It's tell the truth, you know?
I mean, she works three jobs, sometimes four. You know, she's a school teacher. She's a yoga instructor. She was working in a shop selling handbags, you know, for however much little money doing that. And she was trying to making art at night and trying to sell that. And this is someone who has her paintings hanging in the De Young, you know, the museum.
Yeah.
Right. And she's, you know, incredibly beautiful children that she raised. Well, they're, you know, and
amazing family.
We're not. Yeah, we're not. None of us are, except for the very, very top. We're just, you know, a few, you know, things away, like a spike in rent. You know, they basically legally threw them out of that place because the rent spiked, and they were just there for like 8 years. They were just, you got to go.
Just because it's a beautiful area doesn't mean that only the rich gets to have these beautiful areas. So part of what we do through tourism, we're seeing that beautiful areas get taken out by Airbnbs. So that's a whole other corporate issue of, okay, we're going to get our second, third homes, and then they come in. And then part of your documentary really takes on what's happening with the housing, with the Koch brothers and all. Damn the Koch brothers. They really suck, man. They've done such terrible things in this country, and part of even our national parks, part of why we ended up doing this, the Koch brothers were behind a lot of the uranium mining in the Grand Canyon, all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's just, no matter when you wheedle down through all the fine print, you'll always find their name somewhere underneath it, underneath this, underneath that, you know? And when it comes to the housing, we're in a big, big, big problem here.
Yes. Yeah, so
sorry, I'm riled up. I just watched this. I'm sorry.
I lived it for 3.5 years. What we're seeing, it's intense. It does have a positive ending. So
it does.
And I do have a lot of hope. And I think everyone's waking up now. And I hope this movie helps that. But when we talk about housing, so, you know, all these people, you know, the Koch brothers are one of many, right? And Amazon is one of many, right? but it's about extraction and financialization. So where you would have starter homes, right? You know, or homes in general, you'd have a small businessman who is a home builder. He would sell it, you know, the new couple or the middle class couple would, you know, negotiate for that and buy it, right? So now we're finding that the corporations are coming in, the shell corporations. And it's hard to, you know, we see the Koch brothers behind it. There were rumors of BlackRock was behind it. They deny it. I'm not sure what's true. And they come into a neighborhood and they buy the whole neighborhood under different shell corporations, and they pay, you know, 20-30% above asking. So how does the middle class family compete with that? And then what they do is they turn around and they rent it to that middle class family for a lot more than the mortgage would have been. Mm-hmm. Right. So now there's no more accumulation of wealth through the, you know, the paying down of that mortgage. That's like the main structure for middle class people to pass on wealth to their children. And so they just go down and every single business, everything,
and they raise the rate
and extract all the money
and raise the rate of the neighborhood. So no one can invest.
It's the biggest, you know, if you ever bought a house, it's the biggest thing you ever did. It's the hardest thing you've ever did. And then, you know, they just outbid you. You have no shot.
Yeah.
And then, okay, here's the keys. We'll rent it to you for this year.
And then you can't afford the taxes. A lot more you would have paid
than the mortgage.
If you're there, now the taxes just went up. You know, if you're in the same neighborhood.
Yeah.
And you didn't get bought because they go, oh, we'll buy you cash out. You know, you hear all these things all the time. And so I think, you know, your documentary, AmeriCond, is a wake-up call. It's a siren that kind of really put things into perspective, where you start to realize the BS factor. Whereas, and we're so busy. And I think this is what's so hard for families, especially single moms, single parents, I should say too, single dads. Everyone is just trying really hard. And it's hard to keep tabs on even politics. And I think that's another hard thing. And they're abusing that too. Who can keep up with every politician's shenanigans? Because that's all it is. Every single day, you can't keep up with it. And then, oh, you may like this news person, then you find out they're part of it too. So it's really difficult. And I think the documentaries are something we can all actually go and watch, people like us going through what we go through in life. And I think that is probably the only way we can really get enlightened, like one of the way. I mean, there's just... when you want to invest to move forward, it's a way to know that you're not alone, you know?
Yeah, I think, you know, our investigative journalism has been decimated. Mm-hmm. There are still some really good investigative journalists.
There's good journalists out there, but they're not being allowed. Not being allowed to speak, and they don't get funded.
Well they're just being defunded, right? So, you know, used to have all these amazing local papers who had their own investigative journalists, and the internet kind of did away with that by making news free, and no one's buying the newspapers anymore. You know, no one's. So then you have the CNNs, the Foxes of the world, they're really news readers. Mm-hmm. Very little investigative journalism going on there. And they're corporate owned, right? There's basically 8 media companies that control everything, which kind of ties into the whole writer strike that's going on now. So eight CEOs,
AI.
Right?
AI.
Yeah, controls all of it, right? They made $800 million last year, and they don't want to pay their writers. They're trying to break the writers. SAG's up next, the actors, and then the directors they're going to try to break it, right? Now, they've never made more money, more profits, you know, in the last few years, and they don't want to pay anyone. And that give that CEO a pen and have him write a script. Let me see that, or make a movie.
But the AI doesn't even, it's really fascinating. You bring that up in the documentary, AmeriCond, everybody, about AI. And AI, and you had a gentleman in there, an expert, talking about this could be a really cool thing if we do it the right way. It can be incredible and offer these opportunities. And, you know, you've got to watch AI. I mean, you can use things like Grammarly, right? Put it through there and they go, no, disagree. No, this helps. That was good. Nice. But no, if you just go to switch to AI, you're like, no, that's stupid. And we are, it's only limited to what we do. And some of it is dangerous too. It's like,
yeah, so
there's a balance.
Well, yes. So in the film, you know, Kurt Anderson, who's an amazing person, also look him up. He's written a bunch of great books. We found out that the estimates are about 45% of all American jobs are at risk from AI this decade, right? So we're not talking about just, this is going to be the NAFTA for the white collar, right? We're thinking, you know, so much has happened since we finished editing the film in the fall, that might be a low statement, a low projection. Basically, stockbrokers are gone. There's no need for them anymore. There's no need, you know, for contractual lawyers. Probably in the next 2 years, they'll be gone. You know, you'll have people at the very, very top, but that 80%, they're going to lose their jobs. So unless we make this stuff fairer now, it's going to get really bad. Because if you have 45% of the population lose their jobs, and the CEO of IBM just 2 weeks ago proudly stated he's going to eliminate all human jobs, that's American jobs, hardworking American jobs, that he possibly can this year and replace them with AI. Said that like that was the greatest thing in the world. Mm. So, I mean, this is, you know, we have to take the country back, you know, in a positive way. Fix what's, I'm not talking about anything other than fix the system. You know, following Chris Smalls to see how his group, him and like 7, 8, 10 people went up against the, you know, the most powerful corporation in the country with like two tables and a tent.
And no money. And still having to make things work, right? And still make a living.
Yes. And they won. Bezos and Amazon spent $25 million to crush them. Had them arrested. Called the cops on them like all the time.
That was a great part when he says, oh, look who's spending money on us tonight. When all the cops came, he was like, oh, he's spending some money on us. Well, you got some attention.
Yep. So I have a lot of hope. If 10 people could do that, imagine if we all got together and stuck together and said, no, we need to change this right now. We need to push for small businesses. We need to push for the workers and, you know, break up these monopolies. They're way too powerful. They crush small businesses. They just destroy workers. They don't care about anyone. And we can do it. And I feel very hopeful and positive, but we have to do it now. And all of us have to do it.
I agree.
We may be tired. Don't be cynical. Don't give up. It's really important.
I love what you say there about don't be cynical, because, you know, before we started recording, I was talking about how we communicate with people in all aisles and all differences in ways, you know, and I think you've made a good point of this, even at the beginning of the documentary. We really all want to care that we have a roof over our heads, take care of our families, have love and love. And when you're fighting in survival, that's where trauma can happen. And that's where people become homeless, is trauma. And we've done so many interviews on the show about homelessness. And people just like, why don't we just get them off the streets, clean them out? And I'm like, oh my God, these are people that some kind of crap happened. And when we really dig into it, it is about they had some kind of traumatic experience. Could be military, and it could be, hey, drugs in the streets and things like that, which you turn to when something is not right. Mental health, there's all of these circumstances that come into play. And we can, if we unite and go, hey, wouldn't it be nice if we all could just have time out for a Sunday supper together as a family? How many families get to do that anymore? Really? And then the ones that have the time to do it and the money to do it, are you too busy on your damn phones to do it? you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack in that statement, but what I can say homelessness,
it's hope. Is, yeah, there's hope.
Yeah, so with homelessness, 40% of all homeless people work full time. 70% have worked in the last 6 months. So please don't think of them as animals or vermin or something to be, you know, swept away. We're failing.
Oh my
them.
Gosh, yeah. You know, I'm so glad you're here.
You know, yeah. the Mike Buckman, who does amazing things for providing really amazing housing for people that are experiencing homelessness in the Seattle area. His model should be all over the country. But what he said was every $100 the median rent increases in an area, homelessness goes up 10%.
Oh my God.
They're directly related. If wages are too low and housing is too expensive, homelessness, right? Now there are, a segment of that population that is severely mentally ill, right? And they need to be cared for. But I think a lot of them, and homelessness doesn't necessarily mean you're living in a tent, but you might be, you know, sleeping on the floor in someone's apartment or.
There's
you
know, all kinds of ways. Exactly. Yeah. Your car.
Or living in your car. A lot of people. Yeah. We interviewed a lot.
Most people in car. Yeah.
Yeah. They, you know, and then, you know, and then they get too many tickets. They get arrested for being in their car and their car gets confiscated. You know, and then this is downward spiral. Then they're in a tent. Then they're sleeping.
Keep off the grass.
Yeah.
Right. So, it's that same thing.
Yeah. And, you know, we just don't do the right things. And here's a stat that, so talking to, Dr. Gary Evans, who's, the specialist of childhood poverty, right? And it's every dollar we invest in early childhood intervention, like, you know, breakfast, lunch, you know, all these different programs, it's a 7 to 10 times return on investment.
Exactly.
Please show me another investment that is that good.
They're about to take all that away. But like when the pandemic, and they have taken it away, I think actually now, and
for the most part, it's gone.
When we started traveling on our tour in 2012, it was after the 2008 crash, and we did a road trip, for a radio show and everything, and we saw an increased rate of homelessness in this country. And we did some shows on it. And we had Pat LaMarche, who's dedicated towards this issue. And there's another lady, Diane Nyland, I think her name is, and she travels the country documenting this. And we said to her, well, what is the age group? Everyone thinks it's military veterans. She said, at this point, at that time, this is what, 10 years, 13 years ago, right? 10, 11 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The average age of a homeless person at that time was 9 years old.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 9 years old. And what we saw while we were traveling, and this is why we started our tour, understanding like how communities need to be reconnected, have better bond. I mean, it just goes anyway, it goes deep.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things.
Families living in cars and living in the motels. Like there would be like a whole family in a motel room with two beds.
Yeah. So we interviewed, these didn't make the movie for various reasons, you know.
Yeah.
We have a series on this, right? But many people living in hotel rooms with an entire family and a cooktop, you know, and then living in really bad hotels where they had to use the pool water to flush the toilets.
Oh.
In America, in the Orlando area, right? But the shameful thing is, you know, before the pandemic, 1 in 4 children are born into poverty in America. 50% of all children will experience poverty during their childhood. And those number, the poverty thing is a metric that was done, I think, in the 20s or 30s, which doesn't correlate till today. So I bet it's close to a third. Now, we did see a big shift during the child tax credit stuff during the pandemic, and it really alleviated that. But now, as you said, that's been removed. And when I see, especially Republican lawmakers saying that they've never met someone who was, you know, experiencing poverty, and that we don't need to pay for the children's lunch at school or the children's breakfast at school. I mean, not only is that, if you're a conservative and you want to save money, is that the absolute wrong thing, right? That'll cost you.
No one's going to learn if they can't, if they're hungry, no one's learning.
Yeah, $7 to $10 for every dollar you didn't spend. It's morally reprehensible that the children have done nothing wrong, right? And there are children. They're the American children.
And you want someone to work for you. But the problem is where you talked about AI, where it's going to shift all these jobs. And so now are we not caring about our kids because we have AI?
Well, I think
I've just go wonder about where their mindset is on that. Or do they care? Do they care about their grandkids? Oh, their grandkids are fine because they can pay for them, but they're not thinking beyond themselves.
Yeah. So that's the problem, right? I think that is this rugged individualism is the American rugged individual. It's a lie, right? So if you did not, you know, you talk about the, you know, when the people moved to the Midwest and West, and no, they formed communities, they bonded together, they helped each other. And without that community contribution connection, they wouldn't exist. If they moved into the middle of nowhere, they would have died, right? Mm-hmm. So that's this fallacy that we, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Well, so that saying comes from, try it because it's impossible, right?
Yeah.
Right? They don't tell the end of that saying.
Well, who's the lady in the beginning of your documentary? I pulled in about so much time that I cut them off.
Yeah. And it's true, you know, and you see these moms and these families and these children, and that's why we really focused on moms, families, and children.
I think it's the crux of everything. How does a country move forward without taking care of their kids? That is your future. That is your generational that's your legacy too. I mean, we had a lady, Lee Brovedani, as a trust architect. She comes on our show and she's like, to all these business people, what is your legacy? Do you want to be the person is your legacy that you put Americans' families into poverty? What would you like your legacy to be? Yep. Do you want to say you love the kids? Did you want to think about, do you want a park named in your honor because you put people in business?
Yeah, I mean, and the burdens we put on the kids, right, with college. I was looking at a receipt from my college, in the 80s.
Was a great year. Now that I watched your video, your documentary, I'm like, crap, I thought the 80s were cool. They weren't.
No, but it was so cheap to go to college. I mean, it wasn't I don't think it was $1,000 a semester.
Wow.
You know, so. You know, and then in the 70s, most of the colleges, the state colleges and city colleges were free.
And you could work a job then to pay your way. So you could.
So I was working in the bagel store, right?
Yeah.
Making $6.50 an hour, you know, and work my ass off all summer. And yeah, it was possible. Well, the minimum wage is $7.25, you know, and now it's, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70,000 to go to college. It's insane.
Well, now then California came up with the fast track employment law. We do an employment law segment every month on California employment law because it's changing all the time and in a good way. And whatever they do, Washington and New York do, right? And it's been interesting because they came up this fast track thing, which was to protect the fast food workers. And people were getting pissed at it, saying, well, we shouldn't be giving medical and all of this, you know, health benefits and all this to fast food workers. These were supposed to be for kids learning skills coming out. Why do we have older people in there? And I'm going, holy cow, if you see where I go across the country, McDonald's may be the only thing they have for someone to work. And I know we're talking California, but, you know, it ain't what you think. And so people are kind of, I don't ever want to stop traveling because I'm seeing it. And I don't think people are, and that's the beauty of what you do in showing it. I don't think people really realize the shift of, it's a generational shift that is happening right now. People are living longer, but not well. And it's also an economic shift that has been going downwards. While people are living upwards and living longer, we're going down.
Yeah, and the you know, and what I really cannot stand is when people say, well, they're just burger flippers. So I worked in a restaurant when I was 19, 20. Mm-hmm. One of the hardest jobs I ever had in my life.
It is, and you've got to be on it, man.
You've got to be on it. You know, in a busy restaurant, it is no joke. Mm-hmm. And it's hot, and it's hard to do. And there is so much money in this country. This is what people don't understand. This is what they've been lied to. There is so much money in this country. That everyone who works hard can have a great life. So instead of thinking, well, why would that restaurant worker make enough to survive? And then, you know, because that'll just be close to where I'm at. Yeah, well, you're supposed to go up too, right? So we're all got to go up. Instead of thinking of, oh, you know, that's the thing. People think, well, I'm better than them. And they would be making close to what I'm making. Well, you're not making enough either. So don't fight against the person who's trying to get out of. And like I said before, why are we paying for these big companies to keep their people on food assistance when they make billions of dollars and have hundreds of millions of dollars in stock buybacks every year, and they don't pay their people enough to live above the poverty rate, right? That's insanity.
It's There's because no I think there it is kind of crazy. I mean, it's not kind of, it is, and it's short-sighted because it's very, it's all about me. It's really what it is. It's all about me. Your documentary, I want people, everyone, Americond.com, go there, go watch it. I don't think it'll be on Amazon very soon. It'll be no on comment. Apple. I'm just saying, I know you can't, I know I get to say it, but no, really. No, but honestly, I really encourage everybody of any political belief to go there, whatever party you belong to or non-party, like, you know, because every party gets nailed. And so you can go in there thinking, oh, this is going to be a left-wing thing, and you're going to be proven a little bit wrong on that. So go watch it. Everybody's involved in this. And I think that's the beauty of what you've done. You're very balanced in your coverage and bring experts on that can explain the history. And when you talk about how the gap started in the 80s, like, here we were, we actually created this middle America, which is the American dream, isn't it? Work hard, be able to have a home, live in, you know, Beaver Cleaverland with your family, basically, right? Have that nice neighborhood where your kids could play, go down the street, you know, everybody slows down for the kids playing. We don't have that anymore. Now kids are getting shot. We've gone, and you bring up radicalization. And that is where we are now. And when people are pushed to a limit, and I was thinking about this with this whole debt ceiling thing as we're recording, and I know this is airing later, but when they started threatening Social Security, I was looking at Nancy going, this country's going to riot. Like, it's going to get stupid. when we start threatening that crap, because people paid into it. It's not Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. None of that is a perk of living and working in this country. That is what was paid into. And that became part of a conversation of being removed. That will create radicalization.
Well, unfortunately, the propaganda machine is very, very strong. And they've been saying this for a while. They fully intend once, unfortunately, I'm going to, you know, call them out, the right wing, if they ever get in full power, they will eliminate Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. They don't believe that anyone should receive anything, except we should give billions of dollars to the richest.
And campaign contributions. Well.
And so, you know, we have to wake up and forget about Democrats and Republicans. You know, we have to be Americans, right? Because when they split us up, especially when they split us up even further, then we're fighting each other. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what they want. And talking about the radicalization, we've seen this through history over and over again, right? Not just here, but all over the world. When income inequality reaches levels that we're at now, there are three basic outcomes: a police state, authoritarian rule, or a revolution. All three are terrible.
And you know, people, they don't
Revolution. Well, revolutions don't always wind up the way you like them. They also can sometimes revert to the authoritarians, right? So you think you're fighting for one thing, and then, you know, it's like, we have a great thing here. It's broken. We can fix it, right? Much better, easier way to go about things. But so when people feel that they're losing their status, either real or perceived, and they are, then it's easy to lie to them and tell them it's the refugee, it's the Jewish person, it's the people coming over the border, it's the people that don't look like me, it's the brown people, it's whoever the other is. And then they get them to vote against their own economic interests and their own interests. And then we get, you know, that's what happened in Germany, right? And that's what's happening in Poland right now. That's what's happening.
But that's the thing. It's happening around the world.
Yeah.
So I feel like this is, it's a very weird time. We've interviewed Sid Ballman. He's written a trilogy on radicalization, his novels, historic novels. And he is an award-winning journalist, retired journalist of, he was a national security journalist. He's flown with Bush, everybody, FDR, like, been there, done that, all over the world in our national security. And his thing is, when you put people under the, what you're talking about, he's right there with you, radicalization will happen. And if you don't get it now, where we are right now, we are going to be in doo-doo. And we are in doo-doo. We're already there. So let's start undoing the doo-doo. And I'm trying to behave. I don't care either, but really it is about getting a grip. And I just want to thank you as a documentarian and what you do and other documentarians, because it is telling the true story of people telling their situation, and it's open and honest. You see people living the way they are with what they're going through, who are telling their stories, which is not the easiest thing. And for them, the people in the documentary, to be part of it, I want to commend them for being open to the rest of us watching what they're going through and to understand. And because also understanding that pretty much, I'd say 80% watching it understand and can identify in some way, somehow, somewhere, identify. Or maybe even going through it. So I think we do have hope. I think we do. I don't want this to be a downer, but a reality check.
No, it the future is not written. Don't be cynical. Don't give up hope. We have to, you know, we can change the direction of the future. Mm-hmm. We're on a bad path, but we've been on this path before, and we change it in this country.
We did.
Already. We can do it again. But now is the time. You know, mm-hmm. January 6th was the wake-up call. Mm-hmm. If they showed up with guns, it would be very different right now. And even if there is some leader that you think, aligns with your goals or your dreams or whatever, worshiping a leader or wanting an authoritarian government, once you give up this amazing democratic republic, you will probably never get it back. And what happens, that even if you love that leader will die. And the next leader may be very, very bad for you.
I grew up in Africa, man. And let me tell you, they will sit there for years and years and years and years and change the system and change the laws. And what you may think is America the free, it's very easy to go away. It's very easy to lose your right to vote, and people are still fighting for the right to vote. So let's just, yeah, I commend what you do. Thank you, Sean, for joining us here on Big Blend Radio. Everyone, Americond.com out on VOD starting June 13th. So go get it there. It's going to be on Apple, Tubi, right? And all kinds of places. So just go to Americond.com.
iTunes, like five others.
Yeah,
and iTunes. New ones coming on all the time. So you'll be able to get it anywhere that pretty much that you already rent movies or easily can see it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.